Welcome to the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you guys hanging out with us for the next, 30 minutes, Don?
30 minutes? 29 to be exact. 27
minutes. It's getting shorter by the second. We better get rolling. We got a good show for you. We're going to talk a little bit about some things that went on up in the Boundary Waters. Kind of unfortunate situation there. We're also going to be talking about a little conversation regarding guides. Should they have licenses, Don? Ava, we're going to throw that out and have a little fun conversation, a little banter about that. All that and more when we return. Stick around.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, always good to be seen.
Ava, you're here.
I'm here.
And present.
Yep.
Yeah. So I brought a little smoked fish in for you guys to taste. Thoughts?
I must say it was quite tasty and sticky.
It must be that
maple syrup.
Maple syrup.
The bourbon maple syrup is outstanding as a based. It's unbelievable.
So you know, we do have recipes on our website.
Mm-hmm.
If you send me that, I will get it posted up there. We'll call it Eric's.
Eric's smoked coho.
Maple coho.
We'll call it maple coho.
There you go.
Maple coho.
Yeah.
There you go. I like it.
And then you can tell us where you robbed the recipe from.
This is the part that is surprising to me when, you know, I see these guys who would have smoked fish, and I love smoked fish. Mm-hmm. I mean, and smoked burgers, smoked, I mean, just it's such a good flavor. You can have more intense flavor. You can have less intense flavor. But the point is that it just has, it's a really good way to cook a lot of different things.
Right.
And it's not as difficult as I thought it was. In fact, it's a lot easier than I ever imagined. And when you can come up with fish that tastes like that, oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can get a smoker. I mean, I'm using a
Traeger or what?
No, I got the other brand. I forget what that is. Pit Boss.
Pit Boss.
They're $480, and I can do dual trays of fish on it, dual rack, you know, grates of fish. You can cook a ton of different things. You can cook steak on it, whatever. You know, we've done smoked cheese on it and done a lot of cool stuff. But there's plenty of room to do everything. It doesn't cost much, and the pellets aren't expensive. I mean, it's about as easy as it gets.
You know, I think I've only done fish on my smoker once, and it was a few years ago. I've been smoking meats, ribs,
yep,
brisket, and that type of thing for years, probably 15 years. But I haven't experimented much with fish, so I think, do you have to leave the skin on them to do it?
It's easier to do it that way.
Because my fillets are now skinless.
Oh, Don.
Don't have to.
Well, the problem is when you put it on the grate.
Well, yeah,
you scrape it
off.
I'm
trusting there will be more fish. I've only got two fillets.
Well, you screwed up the first set. Now you're done.
Oh no. Because I'll be okay. I'll be okay.
But so yeah, I mean, you know, you're pretty much. I would say I would be committed to not using that as for smoked fish. And the prime reason is when you also smoke it, you're drying out. Yep. You're pulling moisture from. And when you pull that skin off, it's going to be a little bit more, as far as that dryness, it's going to be a little bit more.
I think I'm going to try it, prove you wrong.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You can give it a shot.
Yeah.
You're going to have to put it on foil.
No, I don't. You have fish racks.
You have fish racks, but you've got to get it off. And once it gets on there,
you take the rack off.
It's sticky.
Then you use. Yeah, I understand.
So, anyway.
It's definitely sticky.
The point is, it's really quite easy to do, and it's so good.
It's Ava, very, very
Ava,
good.
Was it good?
It was delicious.
She kept eating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just kept saying, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it's, coho is such a good fish, or the meat is just tender and just tasty. So, yeah, lots of ways to cook it. In town this week, they've had the National Walleye Tour event.
Earlier this week.
Yep, yeah. Earlier this week. We will be getting, next week, we'll be having somebody on from that event, the one. I'm not going to go and divulge that at this moment, but they had to battle some conditions, I will say that.
Well, I think day one was pretty nice.
Yeah.
I think day two is going to maybe be a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, the only thing when they had the rain prior to...
Water got a little muddy, did it?
Now we're seeing the debris and everything coming down, so I think it had some impact on the bite, and I know they're catching them beforehand. They're catching some fish, but... So, yeah, it'll be kind of fun to see what
we'll let you know what happened.
Out. Yeah, and we'll have one of the guys on from the tour. We'll talk about that as well. You know, whether it's winter and ice or summer and storms, etc., you know, it's always when you're spending time in the outdoors, you've got to be careful. And lightning is no joke by any means. It's nothing to be played around with. And in this particular case, it's an example. I was thinking about this, and it was perfect. It came up. Somebody, and not a good thing, but there was a family who was rescued by the Coast Guard after their boat captain was struck by lightning. A family took an outing, took a terrifying turn on Saturday after boat captain was struck by lightning, leaving the group stuck off the Florida coast needing to be rescued. Seven people were rescued off the 24-foot boat after it lost power following a lightning strike. It happened 2 miles off of Cape Canaveral, the U.S. Coast Guard wrote in a post on social media. The family and the captain were taken aboard the Coast Guard vessel and taken to Port Canaveral. And it was a great rescue. Everybody was saved. And, they've got to get the boat because it's a salvage now because it blew a hole in the side of the boat. So, no joke in dealing with lightning, and I've experienced a couple different lightning incidents myself, not deadly for myself, but another person I was watching fishing. I had left Mille Lacs and found out about 20 minutes later he got struck by lightning. So,
oh no.
Yeah, not good. So be safe out there, watch the forecast, and be aware lightning can strike 10 miles before or after a storm's already passed. So, hey, we're going to be right back. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. And, of course, we'd like to have you check us out. And we'll be updating Facebook. That will be happening. So that check us out on Facebook. And where else, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
That was a total misdirection. Dishing it off to Ava. There you go. Lots of cool stuff on the website, so check that out too. And we'll post some photos of the fishing trip last weekend, which was super fun. You know, a couple things that we're going to talk about. First, let's talk about, in off air, we were discussing lightning and, you know, well, how do you know if there's electricity in the air? And you had an example.
Well, I can tell you about the situation that I was in. I was literally up. I was up in Canada, and we had actually bright blue skies overhead. And on the other side of the lake, which was about 3 miles away, you could see a thunderstorm approaching. And my son was up in the front of the boat, and all of a sudden his rod started humming. And he got it arced on the rod and burned his finger. And I just told him, I said, throw your rod on the bottom of the boat. And I mean, he was probably 12 at the time. I said, just lay down on the bottom of the boat. We're heading for land. So we got off the water and that storm, but it had to have been at least 3 miles away. So it doesn't have to be right overhead, which was to my surprise. And the other thing I've seen people's hair stand straight up when we're out in a boat. And I'm going, I think that's an indication we don't want to be here. So we usually try to get out of the way.
We were up fishing, pre-fishing for it would have been a PWT event with Chris Gilman, one of the friends of the show. He's the Browning and Winchester rep. And we were out rip jigging. So rip jigging is where you throw the bait out behind the boat with a jig and a shiner minnow. You let it sink to a certain point, and then you jig it back, and it's a reaction strike. Well, we're out leech and low clouds. And, of course, we're taking you have to utilize every moment that you have. And we were doing that was no big deal until I cast my jig back, and the jig never hit the water. The line went straight out. I casted it up, and it line went leveled out, and the jig was about a foot and a half off the water. There was so much static electricity, it held the line 6 feet off the water in a horizontal line, and then the jig was hanging down off that line about a foot and a half. Never touched the water. I just sat there, I looked at it, and I said, Chris, you got to look at this. He turns and looks. He's like, what?
Yeah.
So I put my rod tip in the water, grounded it,
yep.
And then the line proceeded to, at a 45-degree angle, drop into the water until it got to the jig, and then it went in the water. So I said, Chris, you think we should? Oh, we're fine. So I pulled my hat off, and my hair was standing straight up on end.
Okay.
And then he said, oh, we're fine. Well, we keep rip jigging, and all of a sudden I hear him yell, ouch! His rod hit the ground, and his whole arm was numb. I said, now do you think you want to go in? Well, let's go to a different part of the lake. This is not a really good spot to be in, I think. And he said, you think?
Yeah.
And then we saw a lightning bolt. They said, Chris, we got to go in. So we did. But we had every possible signal. And so don't ignore those signals. Those are absolute. They were telling you that the static electricity in the air is so great that if whatever will allow that to build up, it's going to build up and discharge at whatever point.
Well keep in mind, you're the highest point on the water.
Exactly right. There's not much else.
There's not much else, so it's time to move.
Yeah, and you don't want to be the only thing that they find of you is a tennis shoe with a hole in it. That's not good.
No.
No. Not a good thing. And so that's a big piece of the puzzle. Just make sure you check it out. Probably in the river with a high bluffs, the same thing happens in South Dakota. You could be sitting at, close to a shoreline, and the bluff goes up 80, 100 feet, whatever.
Can't see what's coming.
You don't see what's coming. So keep an eye on your weather. Look for the updates. They're going to say something about lightning is coming. Have those updates turned on. Make sure you have that. It's just seeing some type of catastrophe like that is just, it's not a good thing. And having it happen to someone you care about is just
tragic.
Yeah.
Today you have that advantage of having a cell phone. Most places you can pick up a signal. I mean, even there's some places on the lakes I go to in Canada, I can still get the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, if you go pre-cell phone days.
No, it's not.
No, now it's eyeballs and hair standing on end.
Yeah,
and
you're, not and you're, a good thing.
Yeah, you're seeing that with your eyes. When you start burning your fingers because the rod's arcing, you're maybe too late.
As soon as because the rest is going to get burned pretty quick.
Yep.
So, so moving on to fun stuff. Last week, I happened to be out in Lake Michigan. We were doing some trolling, and thus the smoked fish. And one piece of the puzzle that will impact every fisherman everywhere is current and trolling speed. Even on medium-sized bodies of water, if it's, let's say it's, the western basin of Lake Erie. There is a current. And the deceptive piece of it is you could be going X speed surface water, and your spinner may not even be spinning if you happen to be using a spinner, or your crankbait may not even be moving because the current under the water down by your bait is...
same speed.
Just about mm-hmm. nothing. So we noticed that one direction we were catching fish towards the end when we actually caught our fish, and then I put two and two together and I said, we need to go the other way. We made a turn,
picked
went back
the
same way. Well, actually, it picked up a little bit of speed, and it was weird because we're going into the wind and going really slow. Then we turned with the wind and went a little slower with the wind because of the current.
Oh, sure.
And I thought, what is going on? And next, you know, the guys are like, wonder how long we're going to get those. The last it was three fish. Well, guess what? Dipsy rod goes, which is a disc that pulls your bait deep but off to the side and away, rather than a planer board stays on the surface, which is good for a certain application where you want to get fish that are higher in the water column. The dipsy was the next one that drives the bait a little bit away from the boat but pulls it deeper, and then you have your downrigger, so you have a sequence of presentations. And that dipsy rod went, all right, grab this one. Then the other side, planer board, rockets back. That's got one. And then we're looking around, and all of a sudden, the downrigger rod hits one. So we had three fish in no less than about 30 seconds, all at the same time. And we reel it in. We get two fish into the net. We get them in the boat. Another rod goes off. And one of the fish we had was a smaller fish. We threw that back. And then one that came in at the last, there it is. That's the one. We were done. And, I mean, it went that quick.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, if you're trolling, understand the current. Understand what that can do or what it can prevent the presentation from doing. And, again, I said it, Lake Erie, it's the same thing. You'll have a blow that may happen, and then it's the water's coming back. You may not think about it. There's hardly any wind. But if you're trolling one way with the same power setting on your either kicker motor or your bow mount, and you're going 1.2, and then you turn the other way and you're going 1.6, you've got a situation you need to make sure you're aware of, and what is that bait doing at that 1.6. So really key.
Were you marking fish in all the different depths?
So the graph that we had with the boat, the motherboard fried on it. We had no depth at all.
Oh, really?
I was going off of contours and looking at current speeds. That's all I had to go by. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So my guys I was kind of impressed just because we limited in nothing. You know, on Saturday we were done it in 3 hours, and Sunday we were done in 4.5, I think.
Okay.
But, you know, you just kind of go by intuition a little bit, and then you look at what's going on with the current, and then you start catching fish, and then you start trying to create a correlation between, okay, I caught these fish here.
So how are you measuring the current, underwater current?
There's what's called a fish hawk. I don't have it hooked up, but you could definitely tell when you had that current moving one way and we caught fish that we needed to switch it up and approach it that same way. There is what's called a fish hawk, and the fish hawk attaches to the downrigger ball, mm-hmm. and that has a paddle wheel on it, so you can see exactly what the speed is underwater. And then you have also temperature. That is crazy what the difference can be. You can be out at 100 feet, and it's 34 degrees, and you could be in at 60, and it's 49 degrees. You have those temperature gradients. Those fish will be right along the temperature gradient too. So mm-hmm. not only, you know, not so much a break line itself, but that concept. So it's, no matter whether you're fishing for walleye or trout or whatever, just...
That's the fun of fishing, is figuring it out.
It is.
It is.
There's no question about it. Speaking of figuring it out, Don, guides, what I would consider in the most part, guides are, they've got it figured out. One funny story that I'd want to share with everybody was you and I had a guide for a Minnesota fishing opener up in, where was that? Alexandria or, no, it was, the gentleman had the bow mount with the foot pedal mounted on top of the dashboards. Where was that?
I don't recall.
Well, we got assigned a guide, and the guide, and they call them hosts, not guides. And this particular gentleman had a boat that he was excited about. He just had it recarpeted. You remember that part?
Yes.
He had it recarpeted. I was worried that the motor wasn't going to start because I knew what year it was, and I worked for Evernord at the time. And I thought, well, see how this works. And I got there, and I was going to move the foot pedal off the dashboard, but it was screwed to the top of the dashboard for the bow mount electric motor.
That was his remote control.
That was his, well, it's wired, but not so much remote.
Well, it's remote from the motor.
Right in front of the, on top of the driver console. There was a single console. And it was comical all the way down to the point where I was casting a jig, and I think you remember this, and I casted the jig out, and the jig hit the end of the line and stopped, and I looked at the spool, and there's no more line on it. And I thought, okay. And the wind was blowing so hard, Don. So the wind is blowing so hard. We're like, okay, the bow mount doesn't work. Let's put an anchor out. But it's 20 feet deep, and he only has 15 feet of anchor rope.
Yes, it was straight down.
So, and then he proceeded to get caught. His jig got caught in the anchor rope, so he's all messed up. We're trying to get the boat to stop. So finally, apparently the easy way to anchor is you let all the line out until you hit the depth that the anchor bites in, and then you're going to fish there.
Yes.
And that, I mean, it was comical. So it feeds into this, and it says, should fishing guides be licensed in Minnesota? And, you know, to be a guide, if you're on a tributary of a national waterway, meaning like the river, you need to have a guide's license.
You need to have a captain's license.
A captain's license.
Yes, yeah. From the Coast Guard.
Right. So they talked to a couple people. Tom Newstrom, he's a friend of ours, and a great guide up in the Nisswa area, and Gull and Leech, and that he's an amazing angler up in that area. His thoughts are that it brings a lot of accountability to the guiding profession. Most of the guys I know, he said he knows wants to have guides licenses, so you don't have riffraff that give a bad name to all of the guides that are out there. Ensures the clients that you are a licensed individual. While most favor a guide license, some don't. Steve Carney from the Outdoor News, his thoughts, and he's been a veteran guide for over 40 years. He argues the existing regulations suffice, deeming a guide license excessive. Personally, he says, I don't like the idea, mainly because we're so regulated already. I hate to see more regulation on top of that. Newstrom underscores the importance of training, suggesting a guide license would reassure customers of the guide competence, including essential skills such as boat safety and medical preparedness. Additionally, Newstrom advocates for requiring guide to carry liability insurance, and that's pretty much everybody should have liability insurance if they're going to be going out with people on the water. And he says Newstrom advocates for that piece of the puzzle. Carney agrees, so they're in agreement there. You have to have it or everything goes away. Newstrom proposes a guide license that could mandate the submission of daily or weekly activity logs to the DNR, aiding the agency's understanding of Minnesota bodies of water. Some states in the Midwest vary in price for licenses. Wisconsin residents pay $40, non-residents pay $100. Michigan has residents pay $150 and non-residents $300. He thinks $100 per year for a guide license seems fair. And
what's your take on it? Because you've done some.
I think having CPR training is good. I think having liability insurance is a must. I think the issue that comes to play
is a prime example, is requiring a captain's license is the part that I think is overkill.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think I think one of the things that maybe would be beneficial is to have a, you know, quote unquote boat inspection to make sure that the whatever craft somebody's being in be checked out, that it's a safe vessel to be out in with guests.
I would agree with that. I think the problem I have is that when it gets to the other part, when you have to have a six pack license for the Mississippi River, it gets to be a little extreme, or for the tributaries in Minnesota. And the reason I say that, then you have to have a TWIC card. Then you have to have, and again, don't get me wrong on this, a random drug test done. You have to have all this stuff done. And I will tell you right now, I don't know of any guides that are in a situation where that's even remotely necessary. Again, there's exceptions out there probably. But again, I think that level is beyond extreme. And I think it limits some people.
Is that currently a requirement?
Yeah.
It is.
Any tributary of a federal waterway.
Yep.
So, yeah. So that's my take on it. I think it's, if it's executed properly and not overdone, I think it could be okay. But that's the way that goes. And speaking of goes, there goes the show for the week. Thanks for joining us, guys. Appreciate it. Hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. And I hope you enjoy us next week with more Valley Outdoors. See ya.